Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're back in the rugby dungeon after no rugby today. Ospreys Dragons, I think, was a game.
There was no rugby today.
That was weird.
Yeah, I didn't like it. Didn't appreciate that one bit. But I get it.
We understand why. It's because fans are going to be part of live rugby once again, and that is a wonderful thing.
It is.
So we got... Let me do all the boring stuff first. That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
That's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
We're live on YouTube right now. Leave your comments there and we can... Already, before this podcast started, when we were live on YouTube, Johnny has pointed out that JB casually talking about his charity work whilst the cameras are off. Yeah, JB waited for the red light and then went...
I was on! That's for YouTube only. Yes. We'll be going out on the podcast.
Yeah, well, you can see what charity it was and what JB was saying if you go and subscribe on YouTube and watch our video content there. Otherwise, we're on a podcast, and if you haven't already, please hit subscribe wherever you get yours. And we're at patreon.com/eggchasers if you want to see a video of us pretending not to be drunk in front of the World Rugby cameras on one of our Tier 2 tours to Romania, which we hope to be resurrecting as soon as we can.
Very soon.
Every time you say pretending not to be drunk, I get this horrible flashback of the video that got posted and then swiftly removed when we were in Rome.
Oh, yeah. Like a live stream on the Twitter of us.
Oh, yeah. There would have been... There's only a few people that saw that.
It was including Nick Mullins.
Sorry?
Including Nick
Mullins. Really? He saw that? Oh, my. That was a Negroni, wasn't it? Late at night in Rome.
It was extra dry martini.
We had some... We drank quite a few things that night, but we were at one point drinking Negronis and another point drinking incredibly dry martinis.
I'll never, ever get over one part of that night, which is the ridiculous way that you pay for drinks. I still don't understand it.
That posh cocktail bar.
No, all of them. Like three or four of them have the same system. You pay at the till, you get your receipt, and then you get your drink, and then you pay at the till. But you don't pay at the bar.
It's like a canteen at school.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit like that. But they were like in some posh cocktail bars. Yeah.
They were very, very nice bars.
Yes.
There was something very stylish about them, in a sort of Italian way.
It's just Rome, isn't it?
Yeah, guess it is. Awesome.
Even like the Deliveroo drivers on their cool little scooters with scarves on and stuff look cool.
So identifiable, aren't we?
Yeah.
Just so relatable.
We want to do a Tier 2 tour again as soon as we can.
Yes,
patreon.com for, one of the perks is priority access to live tickets.
By the way, I think one of the best shows we're going to do to date is going to be North Dorset Sevens. North Dorset Sevens sounds like it's going to be a phenomenal day out.
What's the developments then?
I've just been hearing a little bit more about how they're organising. There's the Friday event involving one or two drinks, I imagine. There's the Saturday event involving one or two drinks, I imagine. Then the Lions kick off at 5, so we'll watch that together.
We've even had people donating very cool prizes just to give away to listeners during the live show.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
A rugby ball from... I think it might be from the last... It's either from the last Olympics or the last Sevens World Cup, signed by each of the captains.
Really?
Just one of them off the bat. Someone got in touch and said, do you want to give that away?
That's incredible.
Sevens tournament, yeah.
Awesome. So there's that. We have We've got a team manager. He doesn't know he's our team. He's applied. I've just looked at the one TV.
One TV.
Yeah, that'll do. So yeah, him.
Yeah. So if you'd like to come and play for our team, to be confirmed whether it's vets or social cut.
And by the way, if you want just to apply for a committee job, I mean, we're going to have an enormous committee.
Well, so we need a social secretary.
We need all these things.
Yeah.
We need as many committee members. I mean, we want to have something like three committee members to every player, something like that. Like all good teams.
I was thinking about our stash as well, and maybe we should go Negroni red for our kit. But we'd like orange just on the shoulders.
The problem is, we already have club colours.
Yeah, we kind of do. Now, anyway, we'll talk about this.
If we were playing a whole season, I would be up for our change kit.
Absolutely.
Negroni red. You can get in touch with us on email for any reason. If you've just got a question, a point, a rant, or something you think might make a good conversation. In fact, this is a weekend where we might delve into some other areas because there has been less rugby so far. It's contacteggchasers@gmail.com. One thing. I'm just going to mention this very briefly. We are just at the end of what has been Mental Health Awareness Week.
And
I'm not going to get into anything like that. I just, I'm absolutely fine. I'm on board with people talking about that and bringing that up and stuff. The one thing I don't like, and I just think it's quite, and I put this in my YouTube video, I'm just going to point out the fact that, rugby organisations are totally behind it. And 9 months ago, the RFU got rid of all of their community coaches and their rugby development officers, which are the very people that can reach out and spread the game of rugby, which does so much good for the physical and mental health of so many people. So
I've got some thoughts about this. Not thoughts, but just a different way to understand it, I guess I'd say. And I didn't realise this, but when someone pointed it out to me, yeah, it does make sense. And it's the sort of dichotomy we have of having the professional game tied up with the pro game.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking, like, the last thing you would cut, right, would be the community coaches, because of course
they feed the bottom of your pyramid.
Yeah, but not only that. I mean, it's just morally wrong because you've taken these people out of the job market. You know, being a community coach is a nice job, but it's not a job which you can leave the RFU and just go work for HSBC. You know, once you've committed 5 years to being a community coach in the RFU, it's not automatically obvious to me where you would go next. So in a way, the RFU kind of had a bit of a responsibility to these people to make sure that they could continue in employment
I totally agree with that. I'd also say, if you think more, you know, not just in the immediate term, we've got to balance the books. 5 years' time, there's going to be a fallout for that. Your membership at clubs is going to be lower. The size of the bottom layer of the pyramid is going to shrink. Mm. And that's going to affect the money. At the very, very, very top level, it's going to affect everything. I'm totally on board with the mental health awareness thing. I just think it's just the elephant in the room for me is actions, guys, and we've just sacked off a whole layer of people that support the game.
So the reason that they went, and this is part I was going to come to, and this is the conflation between the pro game and the amateur game, is that the pro game supports the amateur game, but the contracts in the pro game mean that they couldn't be broken. So they've got contractual obligations to, I don't know, the England players or whoever it is, which I'm sure actually, if they had everything laid out for them saying, you know, you can cut this, you can cut this, you can cut this, they'd probably try and salami slice it across the board because of contractual obligations, because of course they're looking after the pro game and the amateur game. The only way they could find savings was through the community coaches, which makes it even more tragic actually.
They did do both. Eddie Jones took a big pay cut.
Yep.
All the players took 25% off their match fees, but obviously
not enough,
25% off a 25 grand match fee that you might get 10 times a season compared to your entire job disappearing. There's pretty stark contrast between those two.
So I wonder if there's an advantage to, well, there's never going to be an advantage to not having these people about, but I wonder if there's another way to do it. So I was talking to a coach friend of mine the other day who coaches a different league, but in the same area. Mm-hmm. Thinking, like, would it not be a really good idea to start almost like coaching society or something? So maybe do it by county, so that maybe once every month you meet up and you just have a few beers and you have a chat about coaching, and I don't know, you set up some breakout groups and blah, 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 all that sort of stuff, and just talk about the things that you want to talk about. And I reckon it'd be quite cool because different counties would not only be sharing knowledge with each other, they might also be developing styles of play. Whereas with the RFU approach, and again, it's not a criticism of the RFU in any way, or of the community coaches, I wonder if maybe we were missing a trick by having rugby taught from the top down So here is what we want rugby to look like. The RFU would set that standard. It would come down all the way through the RFU coaches. And it was good. There's definitely, they improved the quality of rugby, but it was a consistent quality across the entire country. And I wonder if it'd be better if different regions developed different styles.
I think, totally. I think you're... When you're talking about getting together and developing styles, I think you're more thinking about people at your kind of level. Whereas I think actually the thing that we're now missing and what community and rugby development officers and stuff do is they teach volunteers, basically, you know, parents who volunteer their time.
That is true, actually.
They teach them how to teach kids how to catch, pass and tackle properly. Basic skills, which if you haven't got by the time you're 11, you're never gonna make it.
You're never going to make it.
You're never going to make it. But if you may get injured and hurt, you may not enjoy the game.
There's lots of negatives to not having those skills.
Although I also think that you might also get a rude awakening when you get to senior rugby and you don't need any of these skills. Oh, what, you can catch a pass, put that in the bin because we're going to get over the game line now. Because all you're going to do is you're going to hit rucks all day long. Do not touch the ball.
Is that Tuck H training?
Yeah, I was going to say. I think you might be fixated on your own coaching methods.
There are some players who just need to hit rucks. Do not touch the ball. Do not get in between the 9 and 10. Don't do any of that.
Agreed.
It's fair. Another bit of news from this week. We're going to have an England-Saxons team back, which is great.
Yeah, an England second-string team.
They're not England-Saxons. Which was a decision taken by the newly formed Inclusion and Diversity Board.
I do. Who knows?
The RFU,
knows
I believe. That? Was it them? I don't know where it came from.
I'll be honest. There's two parts to this. I've not looked into that side of this story because it just seems ridiculous. The other side of the story is I actually love watching England Day, England Sax, whatever you want to call them, because it's a great opportunity to showcase the guys. I remember... Addison and Mike Haley, obviously, who've gone on to be Ireland capped, but them playing against South Africa, emerging Springboks or whoever, whatever.
Running like Labradors, someone described them as.
I love that level of game, and it's been a while since we've seen it.
It's there for rugby nauseas like us, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Seriously, you can educate whoever you're watching it with. Oh, that's the third string scrum half from Bristol, actually. Exactly. Oh, that's Sam James. Oh, you don't know Sam James?
but this year is even more interesting because obviously England are contributing 10 or 11 players to the Lions, which means that they're the first strength, full-capped England team playing Canada and USA is going to be a kind of 1A, 1B team, and then the Saxons team will be really interesting.
Can capture all those dual qualified players now.
Yeah. Oh, hoovering them up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. You and Ashman playing hooker. Yes, please.
And for the record, I'm ambivalent as to what the team is called. I like watching them, and I like that it's there. I do, however, think that the reason for changing the name is absolutely ridiculous. Okay. That's my personal opinion.
Well, the reason for changing the name, it's sort of...
I don't care what it's called, for the record, and I don't mind. But the reason I find a bit of a farce.
I reckon we should call them the England Graffiti Artists, right? Because the reason that they're doing this, obviously no one cares about the name, right? But they want to release a statement about changing the name.
I don't understand how the name Saxons is... not inclusive.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All that matters
is offending people that we're descended from the Normans.
No.
Or from the Vikings.
What they want to do is they want just to say we're doing something, right? They're doing something. Now, this reminds me of the last great inclusion and diversity effort which they did. And I've spoken about this before, which is the graffiti font writing at Twickenham.
Yeah. So carry them home.
Yeah. In order to make Twickenham more inviting, they decided to use graffiti font across all the hoardings because, of course, if you're from a certain demographic that the RFU supposedly want to attract to, why wouldn't you be attracted to graffiti? It's like the most patronising...
Suddenly, as soon as... But the thing is, Jay, what you're forgetting is as soon as they did that, it changed instantly.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's absurd that you see, actually... Well, actually, you don't see that. You see lots of people in Mustachino standing behind graffiti font and not knowing why it's there, and it all looks absolutely ridiculous.
As with so many things like this, the intention is absolutely in the right place. And the outcome, I'm not really bothered about. I think the name England Day is pretty lame, but that's what you want to call it, whatever.
I'd prefer something just... Yeah. I don't know, I've always liked the Irish Wolfhounds.
Let's do dogs, bulldogs, England bulldogs.
Yeah.
I don't mind that.
What's a Welsh dog? Sheepdog.
Oh, I don't know. County Terrier?
No, that would be the Scotland Terriers. Scotland Terriers, England Bulldogs, Irish Wolfhounds.
Oh, we have Welsh Sheepdogs. Obviously we have Welsh Sheepdogs. Are they Welsh Red Sheepdogs, I wonder? I've got a feeling they are. I think we've got a breed called Welsh...
The Wales Collies.
Red Sheepdogs, I think. And actually red... I mean, it's not terrifying, is it?
The Wales...
Yeah, Welsh Sheepdog. Working dog breed.
Setters, the red setter. They could be...
They're Irish, mate.
Cardigan Welsh Corgis.
Corgis.
The Wales Welsh Corgis, English Bulldogs, Scottish Terriers, Irish Wolfhounds. There you go.
Perfect.
What French be? There's got to be a French dog.
Poodle.
Yes. Now you're talking. Italian? How far can we go? I can't think of an Italian dog.
Well, I will say this. Actually, you can go as far as you want because every single European country has a generic hunting dog. So this is the difference between English hunting dogs and European ones. Europeans like generic ones, which will do everything. We like individual hunting dogs, which will do certain things. So
specialised.
Yeah, so you've like got retrievers.
Cocker spaniels will go and collect the gun dogs, basically, aren't they? They go and get the birds once they've been shot.
And then they've got other ones which will go down holes, and they've got all sorts. Whereas the Spanish and whatnot just have one dog for everything.
See, the fans, and we've got quite a few people getting in touch saying they love the rewilding chats we've
had.
Yeah,
of all the things.
So they'll be loving this.
Of all the things.
There. Our friends at the Mall Over podcast have hopped on and since, and never a truer sentence has been said than this. And if you're an Egg Chasers listener and you haven't checked out Mall Over, give them a go. They're really good lads. Mm. They say, Italian schnauzers. But offence is always taken, not always intended. Taken, not given. That's wise words right there.
Absolutely. The
world would be a better place if we all took that on board. Right. Any other news? Anything else going on?
Mike Brown's career at Quinns is over.
Oh, yeah.
6-game ban reduced from 12.
Do you reckon he'll appeal it just because? Well, got nothing to lose.
He might do, yeah. I don't know, actually. Because, it would be a sad end. Well, it will be a sad end. If Quinns make the top four and Mike Brown is not there to at least... playing those final couple of games, having won it with them in 2012, I want to say.
Yeah.
It'd be a disappointing end, but predictable given the incident, I think. I don't think, if he does appeal, I think he might get a longer ban that might actually prevent him from starting his Newcastle career on the right foot.
Here's the thought, though. Who cares from Harlequin's point of view?
What, from Quinns?
Yeah, just appeal it. It doesn't make any difference if he's banned for 6 weeks or 20 weeks.
Well, actually, it's better for them if he gets banned for 20 weeks.
You're right, it's a win-win for Quinns.
Yeah. If they
get it reduced, they get him, maybe, in a Premiership final. And if it gets extended, brilliant. They might miss out. They might miss playing him. Result. What have they got to... Genuinely, I'll admit this. I was working at the Leicester Quinns game, and I had to... And this is partly because I was just in the back of my mind, as much as I try and ignore them, you can't help but know that there's these people on Twitter just waiting to bite. So I had to think very carefully about how I phrased the Mike Brown question, because I thought there's people that will just leap on me if I sound like I'm too sympathetic when I put a question to Quinns. Because what I wanted to get was just a sense of how Mike Brown had, how he dealt with it on a human level.
Mm.
So as a result, my question was way longer than it normally would be, because instead of going... On a human level, how's Mike Brown dealt with the last week? Which is actually, that's my question. And I try and be as short as I can generally, but I had to preface it with...
He got
suspended. Stamp is really... No, I didn't do that. But effectively, yeah. So
no one deserves a stud to the face.
Yeah. Nevertheless...
it's an interesting finish because, obviously, this is not... The whole thing, the way it's panned out, is not how Mike Brown wanted his illustrious Quinns career to end. With them not offering him another deal, both through Gustard and after Gustard had left.
We don't know that. There's talk that they offered him a deal that wasn't as good as Newcastle. I don't know the truth of this, but yeah. Anyway,
that was certainly my interpretation of reading the article with him, the interview with him in the Mail, that Gustard definitely didn't, and then it came across as if Quinn didn't. But it might be that Newcastle offered him X and Quinn's only offered him 40% of X.
Yeah, it's a commercial decision. I really don't have much time for the idea that
he deserved a contract because he deserved a contract. It's not a lifetime achievement award.
Not at all. But it's just interesting. It's an interesting question because it's obviously not how he planned to finish in this manner, as in before the ban. And then even once he'd come to terms with it and said, right, going to make the best of it, because Mike Brown, everything I know about him, is incredibly competitive. Let's make the best of it. Let's push for top four and let's push to win the Premiership. And then that gets taken away from him as well. So on a human level, it's pretty brutal, actually.
No one deserves a stud to the face, though, Phil.
Well, actually, can you remember where we've seen this before?
Studs to the face?
No, Mike Brown.
He's never had a red card.
So he never had.
I thought he had
never
one.
Had a red card.
Never had a red card.
So
until now,
he's had lots of yellows.
This incident, I remember when I was watching it again, just before the decision came out. I remembered where I saw it before. In 2015, England were playing Ireland and Conor Murray was at the bottom of a ruck and Mike Brown, not looking where he was going, stood on Conor Murray's face.
And that was a total accident. He was walking backwards or something, wasn't he?
Well, it was I think it was a similar situation. I could only find quite a grainy video of that one. I think, all in all, it's a pretty similar situation, but it's quite interesting that 6 years ago, he got off scot-free. This time, obviously, he's got a 12-week ban reduced to 6 weeks.
Well remembered, Phil.
That's very good.
Yeah, the two incidents are, I think, very similar.
Mm. There was another incident. We can go into actual specific games, but just on this one about how the margins are very narrow and things do change as we try and, quote-unquote, wait for it, your JB's favourite phrase, change behaviour.
Change behaviour. Well, that's it, right. What length of ban would it have taken for Mike Brown not to have stood on Tommy Taylor's face?
Well, the RFU said in their appraisal they gave him a 6 week ban, not longer, because it was unintentional, they claimed.
So then, no amount of ban is going to make him change that behaviour, then, you know?
That's maybe where it is. I mean, that is totally reckless. You could argue.
I hear what you're saying, but I sometimes struggle with that. Sometimes, not in every case. And in this case, I can see it, I think. But rugby is reckless by its very nature. Mate, it's big men running as hard as they can each other.
My neck this morning is testament to this game being absolutely reckless. I can hardly move it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, using the paraphrase World Rugby definition of reckless, it's doing something, knowing there is a risk of consequences to your action, but going ahead and doing it anyway.
Which is most things you do on a rugby field, potentially.
Everything you do, but you've got to kind of, if you tackle below waist height, it's incredibly unlikely that you're going to hit someone in the head. Yeah, it's not impossible.
I still don't understand where Mike Brown gets reckless in that.
Well, so he knew. I actually think, I wouldn't want to prove it, but I think he knew where Tommy Taylor's head was. Now, I'm not saying he deliberately stamped, but he certainly had enough information to know where Tommy Taylor's head was.
I think they might have reduced it as much as they could, knowing the potential consequences, and thought, let's say it was not intentional. Anyway, but the one that I also noticed this week, it was in the Leicester Quinns game, was the Ellis Genge yellow card, which I think is one of those situations where it demonstrates how, and I love the way that Phil has always described this, and I've taken this on board totally, is Phil says, what's the coaching point? Because there are so many times when you get a yellow card or a red card and you can sit with a player on a Monday and go, the coaching point for this is do this or don't do this.
Yes.
I think
Ellis Genge, I'm not sure the coaches could sit with him tomorrow and say, there's your coaching point. It's just, just bad luck.
I think the coach has got to say, leave the ruck alone. That's the only conclusion I can come to.
Yeah, and that's where I don't like the way the ruck is officiated at times, because if you're the defender and you've got that strong body position, particularly if you've got hand on the ball and hand on the man, so you're, instead of being 16 stone, you're 32 stone of dead weight, it's so difficult. Now, I do not have a solution to that, but you're right on that scenario.
Because if he hadn't hit the ruck, they get a penalty turnover, and Ellis Genge in the video meeting tomorrow is like, what were you doing standing watching that? You just let him steal the ball.
Yeah, and the other thing, I guess the coaching technique could be just flying from the side, because yeah. because then at least you don't hit the head, but you only give a penalty, not a yellow card.
But then had he come in from the side and popped, I can't remember, it was the flanker, the young flanker,
yeah,
begins with a K.
Kennington.
If he'd have popped Jack Kennington's rib by hitting him in at the side, everyone would have been up in arms going, that's reckless, it's out of order. So this is where I'm going. I'm not moaning overly. I'm just saying there's times actually where as a coach or a rugby player, you've just got to go, well,
so yeah. Maybe that is an actual realistic way to look at the ruck, which is maybe we're going to have to be a little bit more lenient on side entrance. Because if you can't hit the head, which I think we've established now, head's beyond, and specifically this one.
Even accidental glancing with a full wrap.
I couldn't see a way, Luke. I could see Luke Pearce trying to get out of his decision.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had nowhere,
I couldn't see how he was going to do it. I admired him because he doesn't want to send this guy off.
The TMO kept saying, but basically, if you could paraphrase the conversation and summarise it, it would be TMO going, no, give me a yellow card.
No, repeatedly. So you be Luke Pearce,
okay,
and I'll say what I think I'm hearing from TMO.
It looks a bit like a rugby incident there.
I'm going to report you.
You're going to miss the Heineken Cup final,
I
Luke.
Will be reporting you. Yeah, the referee was getting refereed, from what I could see. Yeah, and that sort of clear out. Anyone who plays club rugby, that is, I mean, that's just what happens. You can't get away from that.
Yeah.
Unless we change the laws to allow some sort of side entry, I guess.
Or you totally ban the either the latching onto a player, as in, so you can only go for the ball, you can't latch on, which I would be very keen to apply that.
So when you say latch on, just for our listeners, what you're saying is the ball is am I squeezing the ball? Is this ball underneath my chest?
No, not even then. So I'm the jackler.
Yeah.
You have been tackled.
Yeah.
You're lying on your side and you're trying to present the ball.
Yeah.
And me as the jackler, I'm going one hand to the ball and my other hand is hooked under your arm, your body, your leg.
To make sure you can't get...
Your knees are on his back.
Yeah. So that when I get hit, when the jackler gets hit, that it is 32 stone of dead weight instead of 16 stone of dead weight.
Yeah.
Using a kind of generic back row forward. Premiership back row forward in Jack Kenningham. There's that. The other one, which would be very difficult to referee, but is actually, I think it's in the law book, is the shoulders below hips.
Yeah.
That you're not allowed, according to the laws, to have your shoulders below your hips. That never, I have never seen.
If they started officiating that, the world would go mad.
Picture in your head, right, if I'm just going to say, Tom Curry jackling the ball, picture in your head, what is it?
Yeah. Straight back.
Hinging at the hips, head basically on the floor.
Yeah, yeah. Head level with the ball, basically. Arms tucked, so strong body position. And then using the kind of posterior chain, glutes, hamstrings to pull
He's
himself.
Got a wonderful posterior chain as well, hasn't he?
That's why these Exeter boys as well are so good.
I have to go back to this one clip. Do you remember... I think it's BT Sport.
The training the Curry boys.
It's Steve Diamond holding these two like elastic bands, these two Curry lads on like their super.
There's about half a dozen different sail players with elastic bands or ropes or something. Like, you know, in the movie Gladiator when they get the animals out and you've got all these guys
exactly,
around
exactly, like chains and like spiky collars on the Curries. Like, how do we warm up? Well, we put them in these cages and we poke them with cattle prods and they get these little chains. That's a great clip. I wish BT Sport would get that on to a YouTube video so we could all watch it.
Should we talk about this game for a minute then, other than the incident?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
This first half from Leicester was a brilliant performance.
It was outstanding.
Did we all call this the right way?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure I would have said that Leicester would have won this. Looking back at it.
We all said Leicester would win.
Yeah.
There's someone, one of our listeners, is keeping tally on our predictions, so they'll let us know.
Get in.
For the Tetlock Cup. Yeah,
this made too much sense to me. Quins are a team based on constant selections. Very, very good. Quins also looked like a team that believed what people are writing about them too, which is quite worrying. And just Leicester are gradually improving. When I saw them against Sale, I thought, they could have won that game if the Muvalu try counted. They're a good team.
Yeah, and I can't believe Quins could have won that game again. If you'd have said at half time, Quins are going to do it, potentially do it again, I'd have gone, nah, not this time.
Yeah, not this time. Leicester are too big, too strong. They've got too many powerful runners that they can bring into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought no chance. But you did see, so the first half performance was brilliant from Leicester, particularly because they had two men in the bin. They had 10, 12 minutes.
3-0 in that period.
Yeah. Although
they scored penalty, the 7
yeah,
points.
But yeah, after the penalty try. Yes. Yeah. And that's so Leicester, and I've said this for a few years, that teams who are really well organised, losing a man is not the end of the world to them because their systems stand up. And actually, they vary their systems to a degree to suit being 40 men or 30 men. I mean, when it was Genge who got the second yellow card, it was Dan Cole first, Genge second, wasn't it? When Genge went off, do you know who they took off the field?
Charlie, was it a hooker?
Ndolo.
Yeah, which was really interesting. But
I think that's a conditioning thing because he's not been back, because he got subbed off later in the game. I think he's not had that many games back.
But it also made sense in terms of Ndolo. So in that back line, you've got Ford, who bosses everything, and you've got Ndolo, who just draws in defenders wherever he is. The whole of the rest of that back line is brilliantly solid, but nothing special at all. And so when they went down to 13 men, you wanted the solidity. You didn't want the flashy, so you didn't need them to draw in players, because even if Ndolo draws in two or three players, there's still not an overlap.
In that 10 minutes, he's not getting outside George Ford.
Yeah, exactly.
He's sticking boot.
So it made perfect sense. And their systems, their processes held up. And that's a testament to Leicester. It will also obviously be incredibly frustrating for Quinns that they couldn't break that down.
Yeah.
When their full complement, Leicester down to 13 men.
I love what Leicester are doing. You watch them play and you can tell, even as someone as unknowledgeable as me at coaching can tell, what they're doing is basically what almost every team in club rugby can do, because, well, it's simple. It's stuff that relies on very little skill. And it can be coached to the majority. And I think that's the key here. He Ben Borthwick, can coach what he's doing to almost all of his players to make sure they all know exactly what they're doing. And they're easy wins. It's like they're always going for the 6+1 line-out. They're having the hooker pass from scrum half at line-outs. Well, why are they doing that? Because they're using a maul to draw in players. They're using, you know, they're collapsing their defensive line pretty... Well, how can I say this? They're collapsing out to win defensively. They're using all of these tiny little cheats which you can actually use. If you're a coach doing like level 8 upwards, you can watch Leicester and go, I can take that, I can take that, I can take that, I can take that. Latches.
But you can't take anything from George Ford.
Yeah, you can't take George Ford. You can't take... So unless you've got someone like Ndolo, you can't just have a magnet to draw defenders. And then when there are the holes that open up as a result of the threat of the maul, the threat of Ndolo... Then having George Ford, absolute class. And this was billed as Ford v Smith. Yeah. And Smith had a bad day at the office. He's an outstanding player, and he still had some great moments, and they still could have won the game. But Ford was class.
He is brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's bloody brilliant.
He's superb.
I mean, even that, look, do you know the first try that he scored with
Matt Scott?
That was so simple. That was like an overs underline, and just Ford picks the pass. That's what they do. They've got all of these players playing systems and processes. It's dead simple. It's dead effective. Literally, level 8 teams can do it. I've seen it. And then you add George Ford for the Stardust. And as they get better and as they sign more players, they're just going to improve and improve and improve. Next year, Leicester Tigers, I guarantee, will be top 4.
Put it on the whiteboard.
Where
is it? Oh, it's covered by a
right, we're going to that's being written on the whiteboard.
Yeah. I think they've got a very good shout next
and
year.
And look at the signings that they're making. I mean, I hear that they're making. They'll be making another back row signing who's going to be very good.
They've got a fairly handy back row already.
Even better.
And then,
We'll chat.
We'll chat about it offline.
Okay. You flip it to Quinns. They obviously miss Mike Brown for stability. Tyrone Green is very good going forward, but positionally got caught out a couple of times. But the guy they miss is Esther Hazen, because he's just
big time.
He allows you. He's so key going forward to get on the front foot
In the way Ndolo is.
Yeah.
Just his sheer presence.
But his back line, his defence in the back line is so important, because it allows you to have Marcus Smith and Marchant, the electric guys either side of him. And without him there, neither of those look as potent. And indeed, they had to kind of change the whole structure of the team. You had Lang and North more in the centre with Marchant pushed to the wing, which is, it's a totally different proposition.
There was one really cool thing I saw Marcus Smith doing in well before the game when they first got there, when they all come out in their headphones and stuff and they all just have a walk out on the pitch while they're in their trainers. It's clearly like a sports psychology thing. And he walked around methodically around every little point on the pitch, just meandered his way around, and he held the ball and he went through the motion of kicking to touch.
Really?
From every spot on the pitch, except actually not kicking. He just did the set, walk up, and then at the moment he'd kick, he stopped, walked to the next spot, and it was all like visualisation stuff.
How much of that is the visualisation, but also looking at, right, I know my range from this point, there is, whatever it is, the Holloman and Barrett's hoarding there, there's a yellow pies
all
hoarding
of that
over
stuff,
there.
Yeah.
Did I talk about kicking coaches the other day?
How they're useless and they're pointless.
No, I never said that. I never said that. Right? But this sounds to me...
Pretty sure that's what you said.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah. This almost sounds to me like he needs a kicking caddy. Like, that's a sort of... like, and this is not a joke. I was talking to a fairly well-known DOR. I won't say which one, because this is his idea, right? And he was saying, like, there should be a coach involved with every agency so that they can monitor and track the development of the players, because ultimately the players are the commodity of the agents, mm-hmm. and they need to be able to be tracked so they can make better deals. On the kicking coach, the problem I had with, say, George Ford working with Neil Jenkins is because, well, that's not his coach, is it? If you are Marcus Smith and you're showing up to a field and you're looking around and, like you say, they're measuring distances and whatnot, well, what does a caddy do? He knows exactly what your distance is, where you should kick, what type of kick.
I don't think you can tell Marcus Smith, though, that sort of stuff. He knows, doesn't he?
I don't know. I mean, like Dan Bigger says that Neil Jenkins has been crucial for his career. And who am I to argue with that?
Oh, no, I'm not saying kicking coaches aren't useful. I mean, someone going, no, you should aim for that spot there. I think Marcus Smith's going to go, all right, mate.
Yeah. Well, just measure it out with a little wheel, because I guess all pitches are slightly different length, so he knows exactly how far he can kick it.
Ben Smart has left us a message on the live chat and says he watched the FA Cup final yesterday. He said, I can't fathom how football is more popular than rugby. 80 minutes. Very boring football with awful comms. At least on BT Sport, they have good banter during bad games. So this is where I come down on it. The simplicity of football is what rugby is missing.
No.
Absolute pure simplicity. You could not know anything about that game, and you could watch a game of football, your first ever game of football, and within a few minutes you'd go, okay, I get where I'm at with this.
Yeah, I guess so. It doesn't appeal to me, personally.
No.
But do you know what does appeal to me about football? It's like the business side of football, and actually the sports science side of football is every bit as interesting as rugby, but the game is not as interesting. So it does, you know, it does tick some boxes.
Yeah, but in terms of the simplicity, rugby and football are poles apart.
Do you not think people like football because they get carried away with the crowd? I mean, I saw the Rangers celebrations this weekend, and I couldn't care less who plays in Scotland. It's Scotland country. Anyway.
is it a county?
I don't know, kind of province? I don't know.
I used to be the match announcer at Man City, and I can tell you that there are a lot of people that go to football matches who pay no attention to the football at all.
I know they don't, because I've been to
they just
to
swear at the people.
Yeah. They are facing the wrong way. Yeah. They're facing the wrong way. Like, they all...
It never ceases to amaze me if I go to a football match, and I always make a point of it to look into the corner where the travelling supporters, who have, they must pay thousands of pounds a year for... Because most of them go to most away games for travel, accommodation, if they do it, and just tickets... And they spent half the game, probably more than half the game, like two fingers up at the opposing fans.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, I'm very, very careful before I kind of cast aspersions on football fans, because I just think it's different, isn't it? It's just like, that's what they want. They want to be part of a family, it's like a crowd and a gang.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Whatever.
That's part of it. It's like people go to the theatre, and it's kind of like the...
I'd rather go to a full match in the bloody theatre.
Well, yeah, no, totally. I know, but like part of the going... Yeah. For a lot of people, part of the going to the theatre will be a meal beforehand, or it'll be the ice cream at the interval, or whatever. For football, it's like, yeah, the football's part of it, but actually it's the beers.
Beers on the coach.
Beers on the coach. It's... cause it, you know, throwing bricks at the away team.
Yeah, a bit of danger.
Joke. Yeah.
Invading the pitch.
There definitely is something
Actually, one of the sad things about football is there is no pitch invasions now.
Not anymore.
Which is a real shame. There should definitely be pitch invasions.
More pitch invasions.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't think they did any harm. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there were awesome times when they did harm.
There probably were a few years.
Yeah, but like, think about the optics back in the day of like players being carried off by fans. And now it's so sterile because the fans are so distantly removed from the players that you just don't see that anymore. It's
one of my earliest rugby memories was, I think England won the Grand Slam in 1991.
Yeah,
and it was Will Carling and all the players being carried off on shoulders.
Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
It is amazing.
Now,
yeah.
I don't think rugby needs to do so-called pitch. I'm not saying you should pitch invade. Do not pitch invade. Right? But I don't think we need to do it anyway, because actually our access to the players is amazing. Yeah. Like, you know, you can go to Sale and you will see all the players up in corporate, and they'll come into the crowd and they'll do all that stuff anyway. In football, I'll give you an example. And again, it's I'm not trying to disrespect football in any way, but this is the difference between how remote the players are. When Chris Ashton was at Sale, I interviewed him on the stage in the marquee thing, and then we walked back, and I got fed up in the end because Chris Ashton just had to sign pictures and have selfies and whatnot. Can you imagine just Luke Shaw or someone going outside of United onto a stage and then walking back into the stadium? Like, he would never get there. It couldn't be done.
Yeah, that is the difference, isn't it, in terms of the fans, the fame, the celebrity, the scale of it.
The passion, to be fair, as well.
Yeah, the whole thing is totally different. And back to the first point, there is something in the simplicity of football, whether it's, and certainly I prefer rugby as a game, both playing and watching, but there is something if we had a ball now, we could have a game of Wembley or something like that.
Yeah,
a game of, you can play anything football. With them. Yeah. The three of us, what can we do? We can't even lift in a line out. We can't practice scrummaging. We could do a little handling drill. That's about it.
You need numbers for rugby.
Yeah. Whereas football, anywhere, jumpers for goalposts and all that, you can have a game.
But on that point, on simplicity, this is why so many times we talk about the law of unintended consequences. When you try and clear up one thing with rugby, you can end up making various other things much more complicated.
Did either of you see there was a Ross Tucker video about a month ago? It was a presentation that he did to World Rugby talking about, effectively law variations to try and improve the game, make it safer and other things, and making that exact point, saying that if you have a law change, it can do three things. So if you want to, say, reduce concussion, you make a law change, it can have a positive effect, it can have a negative effect, i.e. Reduce concussions would be the positive effect, increase concussions would be the negative effect, or neutral, it can have no effect on that one thing. But equally, it can have another consequence. So, for example, it could, if you reduce the tackle height, it could have more people blowing out their knees.
Yeah.
So you have a positive, negative, or neutral on the adjacent scenarios as well. Now, he wasn't trying to solve the problem in that, but he was just setting out the problems of trying to solve the problem.
Jerry makes a great point on law changes, a phenomenal point, and I'll back him to the hill here. Stephen Jones makes a great point on this. He says that there are people in the game who are trying to change the game in order to make it fit a certain profile. So there are certain things which people think are good. So fast rugby, offloading rugby, attacking rugby. And his point is, no, you don't change the laws to get those things. If the teams come up with it, fine, but that shouldn't be seen as superior to slow rugby or physical rugby or any of the others. And I completely 100%...
I can get on board with that. The one thing I want to change, and I would have all my law variations pointing towards, would be more rugby.
As in ball in playtime.
Whatever speed that is, doesn't really matter. I just want more ball in playtime.
Yeah.
That is a great point, actually, because more ball in playtime, you can do what you want with it. Yeah. If you want to...
You can pick and go.
Yeah, from 22 to 22, you can do that. If you want to run it all the time, you can do that. And actually, to the point we were making a few weeks ago, to be a successful rugby team, you've got to be able to do both. You've got to have everything in your armoury, otherwise you will get beaten at one of those things.
Can we just finish off on Quins?
Yes.
Because, of course, we were talking about Quins. No, we're not. Just going back to Quins, do we think they're going to make top four? You were pretty confident last week they're definitely going to make top four.
Yeah, and I think I know Northampton have got a easier run in. They do. I think the fact Quins got 2 points and somehow almost managed to get five again. They almost did it again. But those 2 points could be crucial. So they're what? They're 11 points clear with Northampton having four games to go. So
yeah.
Basically, Quins...
Quins need to win two, don't
Quins
they?
Possibly only have to win one of their three games.
Yeah.
So I think they'll lose against Bath and they'll lose against Sale. Which means that they've got one against, is it Newcastle? Which they could win, right? I think they're up against it here. I think they're really up against it.
I think they'll be okay.
Unless, and then Northampton have got Newcastle tomorrow, and I can't remember the other three. But if they can get three out of four, and Quins can't get...
Northampton also have Exeter.
Yeah, so that's one that they'll lose.
Yeah.
So they lose that and they win.
Yeah, that means 15 points, which means Quins can basically win one more game and qualify.
Is that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a cat.
Oh.
There we go.
Yeah. Mm. Right, yeah. So I think they're up against it, but I don't know.
The two points yesterday was crucial.
Had Northampton not fluffed their lines against Gloucester last week.
Amazing that. What an amazing loss.
It would be a lot more interesting, but now I think it'll be absolutely fine. Mm. Getting a lot of attention here.
Yeah, you are.
Quins away to Bristol, which was an awesome game about a month or so ago, wasn't it?
Which one, sorry?
At Ashton Gate.
Oh, Quins Bristol.
Yeah, that was an awesome game.
They lost the last
yeah.
second.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an awesome game.
Because that was two tries in the last 5 minutes, maybe, from Bristol.
I do feel sorry for Quins, but it is like... It's sort of proving to me what I thought I knew about rugby, which is you need your squad to be winning league games and you need your best people to be winning the playoff games. Mm-hmm. And the reason you need that is because if you've got your best lads playing week in, week out like Quins did and they go down one at a time, Will Evans, Esther Hayes and Mike Brown, whoever else the next guy is, when you get to the playoffs, you don't have those people involved. It's like Exeter Chiefs. They do not need... to use Stuart Hogg to beat Worcester. Just doesn't need to happen. But they do need him to beat Leinster. They do need him in the playoffs. And the Quins have got so far, not through luck, through playing very, very well, but also because they have had consistency of selection. And once these guys start going down, it's going to be... I mean, if they get to the playoffs... Well, when they get to the playoffs, it looks like.
I think they will get to the playoffs, but they will get one game, and that is it.
Right, let's... get rid of that cat. Thank you. Let's talk about England this summer then. We've already touched on the Saxons and what it's going to be called, but there will be some new faces in terms of players. There'll also be, at some point in the not-too-distant future, some new faces in terms of coaches in the England setup. Jason Ryles has decided to stay in Australia. Simon Amor has left his role as skills coach.
So, on Jason Ryles, I understand... rumour, he's off to replace somebody in NRL.
Which is where he's come from.
Yeah. Where he's come from, yeah.
And it's a very, very large job, but I won't say any more than that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you can understand that, totally.
Yeah. On Simon Amor, I mean, someone had to fall on their sword, right?
That was a big gig for him he was attack coach, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's
huge.
That's a massive gig relative to his experience.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I think we'll look back at that and think, what an odd decision. What a weird appointment.
To be honest, I think we might not look back at it that frequently.
I don't know. I think I would. I think I would, like, what were England doing at this point? Now, the theory...
It doesn't really matter. It's what happens in 2023. If England do well in the World Cup, who's going to go, let's talk about
let's
that appointment.
Years.
Maybe not.
Won't matter.
So the theory is Eddie likes just to rotate his coaches for a couple of reasons. One is he burns them out. Yeah. So he's on his 86th coach now, but also he wants it fresh every time the England lads come into camp. Maybe that's a good idea. I don't know. Maybe we will see. But this is described as Eddie's last roll of the dice I don't believe it is actually at all, because he still has a pretty consistent record of turning over his coaches. It looks like business as usual to me.
Yeah, he never really has a massive problem attracting new coaches. Who wouldn't want to work for, well, with one of the most talented groups and also one of the best paying unions on the planet?
I'd do it.
I don't.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think it's a major problem.
Yeah.
Riles is disappointing because I was actually quite... Having read about him when he first got announced, I was looking forward to it. Yeah.
So he is... What's his background? He's NRL, isn't he? He's very highly regarded.
He was a prop, wasn't he?
But he's moved away from NRL to get other experience and now he's going back into
NRL.
Now
he's going back. Well,
which is kind of exactly what the England roles have been used for in the past. Now, we've never actually seen him coach in England because I don't think he's ever shown up to...
Well, no, he didn't. He didn't travel because of COVID.
Yeah. It's a real shame that I do think he'd have been useful.
And the way Australia's been the last year, I'd understand it if you go, look, if I go and take this job in England, I might not see you for 2 years.
Yeah.
To his family. So, I'm not even joking.
No.
There are people that I know. In fact, my sister is a nurse in London, and she's working with someone who was meant to be here for a year on a year visa working over here from Australia, and they haven't been able to get back since 2019 to March last year. They've been trying to get home, but they haven't been allowed to go back to Australia. So maybe stuff like that played into it. Who knows? But anyway, that'll happen. But in terms of players, what faces do you want to see? Because as Phil rightly pointed out earlier, get off your bloody phone during the podcast, Jay.
I'm reading the messages.
Oh, okay, cool. As Phil rightly pointed out earlier, there's way more space than normal because 11 England players away with the Lions, meaning the Eddie Jones' summer squad's going to be swelled with new faces, and you've got the England A
squad as well. That's a great question.
So the obvious ones are, you know, Marcus Smith.
Yeah, and I think we would have seen... I said this at the end of the Six Nations when I heard Eddie Jones kind of close an interview. I think we would have seen Marcus Smith regardless.
Yeah,
certainly in the squad. Now I think he will get game time.
Oh, 100%.
It's interesting to see how much pressure that is putting on for a positive for George Ford, who is playing some really good rugby.
I was going to say I feel sorry for George Ford, but I don't actually, because I think he's only missed two of Eddie Jones' games in his entire career.
Yeah, he's played pretty much everything.
He's Eddie Jones' most used player.
Yeah, so
he's occasionally dropped to the bench. But
the thing about him is he probably will not get recognised as the player as good as he is.
I agree with that. I think because he doesn't kick when Owen Farrell is on the field, and because obviously Owen Farrell's captain.
Yeah,
and I don't know, just other players, even though he makes the team tick so much, other players seem to get more of the plaudits, more of the good. And there's so many passes. It's not just for England. I think it's elsewhere. There's so many passes that George Ford throws that were it, well, Sippers being the obvious one, it would have been everywhere. For some reason, George Ford is just not seen as that
trendy. It's weird, isn't it? I think it's Northern. It's because he's from North. People hate him as far as well. I reckon they don't like Northerners.
It's a disgrace.
He doesn't quite have the controlling game of Owen Farrell. And he doesn't quite have the attack game of Sippers. He's a sort of mix of the two. And that's why I don't think he kind of gets exactly what he deserves.
He can do everything. The only weakness in his game,
it's probably not even fair that
his weakness is his defence, but not even he makes tackles. His tackle rates are actually very good.
Yeah.
But he makes soft tackles, negative, concedes yards.
Johnny Gray tackles. Soak up tackles.
I wouldn't describe them as that, but no.
Yeah, he soaks up.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. I don't think I'll be talking smack about any professionals or ex-professional players until after September.
You can't help yourself, JV.
I can't help it.
Other names and faces, like Ollie Hassel-Collins on the wing, yep. I'd like to see.
Loader as well.
Ollie Thorley, now he's fit again. He's on the bench for Gloucester this week. Thorley's injuries.
Let's just think about this, okay? Are we thinking about new players for England or new players or players you want to see for England Saxons? How do you categorise these two? So is England Saxons for the younger players or is England Saxons for the second rate players who won't get into England now and then the England spaces are open for the future England players?
So it depends how they want to run it. I would pick two teams to win.
Yep.
Obviously, Lions are gone. England, the main England, get first choice of the next 28 guys or however many it's going to be. Saxons get all the rest.
Yeah, and I saw an article, it might have been in the rugby paper or somewhere, about how the Saxons, or the England A, sorry, should be used as under-25s only. And I just, no, that's, in my humble opinion, bollocks. By its very nature, you will get young players more so being used in that side, but I would just pick the next cabs off the rank because I think that's the point of that team.
I know you just told me, which team?
England A.
Oh, right, yes, I completely agree with that. Yeah, so then do England develop people like Finn Smith at Worcester and Rafi Quirk at Sale?
If they're the next cabs off the rank, yes.
I think Rafi Quirk goes straight through to...
I think he might well go into to England A. But Finn Smith, no, because he's got Jacob Umanga, Joe Simmons...
Orlando Bailey?
Marcus Smith all ahead of him.
Charlie Atkinson
possibly as well.
He's got Billy Searle ahead of him.
Billy Searle probably ahead of him. Yeah, so no. So not Finn Smith. So this is my point. I don't just want to see people in there because they're 18 and might be great in 5 years' time. No. Pick the next best players.
Right.
My opinion.
So for instance, would you like a midfield for England this year of someone like Mark Atkinson and that kind of player?
I'd be happy for Mark Atkinson.
And Sam James, that'd be ace.
Joe Marchant. Well, Henry Slade. Ollie Lawrence.
Of course, Slade. Lawrence.
Devoto, I'd like to see.
Devoto, he's been playing really well
again. Sam James and Luke James, I think, could get a call up to one of those two teams.
You know, the thing which puts me off this is COVID. Because as a player, I can't think, as you know, imagine being a 23-year-old making some good screw from a rugby contract with the club and then going on holiday effectively to where they're going?
They're not going anywhere.
Canada and USA are coming here.
So it used to be the case that you'd go to the Churchill Cup. That sounded like an absolute belting holiday.
I would have loved to have gone, taken our podcast over there.
Churchill Cup would be unbelievable. But now with COVID, I mean, yeah, they get paid and whatnot, but do you want to...
Do you want to wear a rose on your chest and play for England's second team?
And then the Saxons, okay. The great thing about Saxons is it's amateur rugby for professionals. This is what these guys would look like if they came down your club. You get a really, real good view of them.
So I know this is at odds with a lot of people. There are quite a lot of people that want to see loads of real young players. And if these players are really good and happen to be very young as well, fine, get them in. But and actually, to be fair to him, that's whether you agree with the selections or not, this is what Eddie Jones has always done. He's paid very little attention to age, except for the academy places, but then they always have the asterisks next
year.
Yeah,
apprentice players.
Oh, and also the dual qualified ones who we can't really work out why they're there.
But we've been through this so many times. We've been through this so many times because if Eddie Jones was picking them because they're dual qualified, he would have...
Don't think he was.
He would have capped them. And he didn't cap Cam Redpath or Paolo Adogwu. Or
Paolo Adogwu,
Gary Graham.
Maybe he gets a cap.
Yeah, he should.
Maybe
Paolo and capped. Yeah, maybe it's.
I actually do hope he goes and has 80 caps for Italy now.
Yeah, same. I would love him to be a Lion first, though. I could just get. There's some way he could get on the Lions tour and then play for Italy. That'd be the best trivia question on earth.
Here's a question then.
Oh,
so
yes,
just looking at the obviously the Lions squad and knowing who else is missing, so. Mario Itoje, Johnny Hill, Courtney Laws, all with the Lions. Launchbury missing.
Hurt.
Yeah, his knee's gone. Chris out in
Japan.
Japan. He's going to play second row.
Charlie Ewells.
Charlie Ewells will.
McNally.
It's a good question, that.
Ribbons.
Yeah, Ribbons. Dave Ribbons. Bird. There you go. Yeah. Done.
Who?
Ewells, Ribbons.
No, sorry. Bird. Moon.
Alex Moon. Yeah.
Essentially.
There are a couple of lads at Exeter as well, isn't there? Is Salmon one? Salmoned?
Hasn't really played this year that much.
I'm trying to think of like some other boys who are like peripheral. Because that's what we're going with this.
It's a good point.
Harry Wells, perhaps?
Yeah. George Martin.
George Martin, yeah.
I see him more as a second row. He could play second row.
I think George Martin long term will play second row.
When he fills out.
Well, he's 19, he's 6'6", and nearly 19 stone.
When he fills out.
He doesn't seem that big.
I've stood next to him
and he doesn't seem that big.
That's what he's listed.
Sorry, I'm sure he could pulverise me, don't get me wrong.
Phillips from Bath, surely he deserves a call.
Sean Robinson's had a good season. Newcastle. Yeah, that's a good one actually. That'll be one to watch, second row.
Yeah, second row, particularly like as you get into the Saxons.
Yeah, it's going to be what some
under, Beaumont will play.
Oh, Beaumont, Matt Postlethwaite, definitely. Well,
friend of the pod, Ed Slater.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
McGarvey's in. No, I think the Bath pairing are a good shout. They definitely seem like lads that are going to be England A or England when the Lions are away.
Ewells will be.
Wouldn't surprise me if Ewells captain's the thing.
Possibly, yeah.
Awesome. Get old Ed Joyce in there, innit?
Yes.
Oh, Joycey.
Darren Barry, get in from Vans. Get in, boy.
I think Ford might captain it.
Oh, yeah.
I think Ford's, because he's such an Eddie Jones type of player. As you said before, most used player, but he's such a rugby fan, rugby knows type of rugby player that I can just see him. And I'd be very happy for George Ford to captain it. And when you see any of the stuff with the England players, England camp up close, Ford and Farrell are the two voices who are leading everything.
Pretty much. Yeah, I can definitely see Ford captaining this, actually.
Are you on Clubhouse?
Yes, I am. Why?
Yeah, no, I was just fiddling around. I had a bit of time and I was fiddling around with it earlier. Did anyone talk about rugby on there?
Yes, oh my God. Yes, the answer is.
I should have just brought this up over a cup of tea earlier rather than now. It just popped in. I just had a little notification pop up.
Yeah, there's a little Clubhouse thing. I don't even know what it is. If I talk about Clubhouse, I'm going to sound so stupid. I don't know what happens. Something happens on Friday night and people talk before the games.
I'm looking like totally blank.
Yeah,
so it's a new kind of. You basically just have you
podcast,
listen in, and you can contribute as well to just conversations with strangers through an app online.
Yeah, so
audio conversation.
Audio. Oh.
So if you follow Matt Hardy, he's a journalist on Twitter. Good journalist, good guy, and he does a Clubhouse on Friday nights before all the stuff kicks off.
A clubhouse.
I don't know what it is, mate. I don't know, but it's like,
well,
that.
Maybe we should start a rugby one. Is he UK based?
Yeah, UK based. Good guy. Does rugby. I was thinking of joining that on. I did listen to him on Friday. Good knowledgeable stuff.
Should we just say to our to listeners then, me and you will drop in on whatever that on Friday night.
I think so.
Yeah.
Just jump on my mind. I don't know. I the answer is I don't know. But we could be there. I mean, if we can.
All right, fine.
We can do something. I don't know.
Sorry, I shouldn't. I'm normally more disciplined than that, and I just I suddenly started speaking the thing that was on the
front
of my brain.
What am I doing on Friday night just before the rugby kicks off? Well, I'm thinking about rugby, so I may as well tell you what I'm thinking. So it doesn't really matter. Talking of things that happened on Friday night, Bath Sale.
Yes.
What a game, Tim. I'll let you lead off on this one.
Very good. I really enjoyed the game. I thought that two good sides played an excellent game of rugby. What I really liked with Sale is that they've just dialed up the offloads a bit more. They've clearly done that deliberately. It was noticeable. I mean, those Dupree twins have always been really good at it.
Well, well no, they've done it a lot. No, are they good at it?
No, they are. They are.
Are they good at it?
No, they are, yeah. They are. They're very good at offloads. They've just, it feels like Alex Anderson just cranked the offloads up a little bit, and that's where Sale were getting some fruitful attack play through. And I think with it drying up a little bit and we're moving into well into May now, I know the weather doesn't feel like it, but I think that's a really good move. And if they can keep that going along with the brutality that they've got, they're going to be a challenge. They're going to be a real test.
I don't know. The answer is I do not know. First of all, Cameron Path's try. How was that not a forward pass? I will never get over that.
Let the boys play.
Wasn't even questioned. Not even like commentary question.
Never got mentioned. No one mentioned it.
Because no one mentioned it. I was like, I'm going mad. If the comms haven't mentioned it, I'm not mentioning it.
But it was the lines cut into the pitch. It started on one line. The pass started, it was made at the start of one line, and then the next line, 4 or 5 metres down the track, was where it was caught.
Yeah. Which could be...
physics.
Which could be.
Could be physics and momentum. However, they weren't travelling fast enough, and the gap, the space between the players, wasn't large enough for that to have been a factor.
And also, the player who passed the ball stopped close to the first line, and the ball finished close to the second line.
I just think we shouldn't talk about it. At the time they want to talk about it, let's not talk about it now, because...
But then the Visa try, right at the end of the first half, got every single section of that try got interrogated, including
yes.
the...
Yes.
And that was...
It was a Hammersley try.
Oh, sorry, it was the Hammersley... Yeah, it was the Visa offload.
But
yeah,
I do think you're right, and this should change in rugby, that if you remember it as a Visa try, because of the thing that he did, it should stand as a Visa try, not as the...
As Hammersley. Hammersley almost messing it up.
Yeah, exactly. And didn't they drop one as well? John Luke dropped one. John Pierre scored. Is it John Pierre? JP Dupree scored.
Yes.
John Luke dropped the ball over the line.
Yeah.
So they could have had more.
One notable thing, and I won't go into it in too much detail because it's basically the same point as I made against Leicester. In that second half, Sale were down to 13 men for an extended period of time.
This is what I want to talk about.
And Bath could not get over the line. Now, I don't know how to disaggregate how much of it was Bath messing up and how much of it was Sale's, the systems, the processes, the structures that have been put in place by Sanderson. But credit to Sale in that instance, because to have the onslaught that they faced or to have the pressure that they faced and not concede with 13 men on the pitch late in the game is impressive.
So do you look at this as in it's amazing that Sale continually win with yellow cards, or do you look at it as if why are they not playing this well when they have a full complement of players? Because they're obviously playing within themselves and then they've got two cards. I mean, I thought
it's not about within themselves. I think it simplifies exactly as Phil mentioned about Leicester earlier. It totally simplifies what your outlook on the game is. You just zone in. You go, whenever AJ McGinty gets the ball, he's going to kick it as far as he can. Other than that, defend narrow, like for every inch, basically. That's it.
Kicking, kick chase, line speed. Just your basic defence coach mantra.
Line speed.
Saracen circa 2011. No, 2013. 14, basically.
So, yeah, okay. The reason I don't think that's quite right about the simplification of how you look at the game is because the Sale team that I want to see is the Sale team that ended the game. So, I joked on Twitter that the yellow cards came just at the right time for Sale because they needed to get back in the game, and they've done it against Wasps with 13. I think they might have had 13 against Leicester for a little while. Definitely twice. Now it's three times that they've done it with 13 men for an extended period of time. And it seems to breathe life into them. And then when they get the guy back, they don't go back to normal. They don't go back to their shelves. They then increase intensity again. And then they get the 15th guy back. And then they increase the intensity again. Now, luckily for them, when Byron went off for a trip for their third yellow card, didn't affect them because it was all down to the pack. But at that point, you knew there was no coming back for Bath. Whatever it is in Sale, I want them to be finishing off like they did at the end of the game, not starting like they did and needing two yellow cards.
Listen to him talking about what I want for Sale. Is this is your old team versus your current team?
Well, I'll tell you what, one of
Bath fans will remember when you absolutely loved them. They were your team.
I do love Bath. I think Bath is I honestly think Bath is probably the greatest club in the UK, maybe in European rugby. If you were to sketch out a bunch of clubs that you'd like to play for, you put Toulouse on there, you put Bath on there. Would you not?
Ulster, number one.
Well, not exactly. Not exactly. Maybe Leinster. I wouldn't mind a couple of years in Dublin.
Leinster would be quite good fun.
Leinster, Toulouse, Bath. That's a
Benetton.
Benetton.
The unbeaten Benetton Treviso.
The only unbeaten team in the Rainbow Cup in the
Mushroom Cup.
Who would you rather... Which English club would you rather spend your time with? I mean, there are people who like Exeter, I guess, because it's nice and countrified and whatnot.
Saracens and Quins.
Quins for a certain disposition, yeah.
Yeah. Free Maserati parking for me.
Yeah, exactly. It is important. It is important for you, actually.
Well... Because they've got old-fashioned grounds in the town, Leicester,
Northampton
a little bit, and Gloucester. Those three, especially because they've got old grounds in the town, and
you're not a big
and
fan
Bath
of the,
as well.
I'm a big fan of the AJ Bell.
Bath as well.
Right in the middle of Sale country. That I can walk from Sale to the AJ Bell quite easily.
It's quicker to walk. It's quicker to walk to the AJ Bell than to drive there.
You could.
You can walk from.
You could go on the canal.
Yeah, exactly. It's lovely.
And then
you might get done by the pusher.
The historic Ross Harrison.
No, for anyone
past the sewage works.
Listening, that there's a local urban myth or legend that there is someone called the pusher who pushes people into the canal and is thought to have been the cause of many murders in Manchester.
Well, we do have...
There are a lot of people that die in the canal.
Yeah, and also there's a cyclist that was pushed in the canal, and apparently the pusher, this is the only actual sighting of it, it's fairly recent, tried to keep him in there. That's the only actual sighting. Yeah. But I wanted
stay safe.
I thought that moniker would be really good for a Manchester-born prop, so I tried to get it going for Ross Harrison. And he was like, no, I don't like that. I announced him on the stage, the Manchester pusher, Ross Harrison.
it sounds like a murderer or drug dealer.
Say I want this for sale. I want stuff for Bath too. Because
Bath were decent.
I agree. I think some of the best stuff that they played all season was in this game. Set piece was good. Attack in places was good. It's another loss, isn't it? And
not every team can win.
Losses breed losses.
They look like they're on for a losing season, and they might even miss out on, well, at the moment, Europe, which is astounding.
Yeah, well, certainly Heineken Cup.
I will just draw an arrow back to last week's podcast and the points I made about the players they've missed for the length of time they missed them, because this season is particularly unique, and I won't go over it again. Just go and listen to last week.
Sensible, Tim.
Repeat.
Have you read the emails that we're getting from our listeners?
Yeah.
So we've got three emails from three different listeners about... One of them wants to change the season ticket to Bristol, which, I see some logic there.
I saw that, and then considering whether or not to renew and having a chat with his son about it, I think that's not what being a fan is about. That's what JB did. He switched from Bath to Sale.
Yeah. I would do that.
No.
There's obviously some strong feelings that you're still on board that the only thing which is wrong with Bath is the players.
Well, look at what the only thing I've got to look at since last week's conversation was a narrow loss to Sale, where Bath played well.
To the third best team in the league.
So, what do you want me to say after that? Go, it's got even worse at Sale. It's got even worse for Bath because they narrowly lost to an awesome Sale team.
Oh, sorry, the second best team in the league.
So what do you want me to say after that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, do you not think the fact they can't... I don't think they can have a winning season, though.
Okay.
I mean, these things are not serious.
Well,
I think they're serious. Do you not think they're serious, Phil? The amount of money they spend?
The salary cap. Most teams spend the salary cap, right? So if you just take out Worcester and Newcastle from that, okay, who are the teams below them, right?
Wasps don't spend the salary cap.
Wasps as well, yeah. Okay.
Leicester are not at the salary cap.
Although, you don't know that.
I do know that. Mm. I do know that.
Do you know how much they're paying to Kyle Eastmond?
I don't know the exact things, but I do know that they're not at the salary.
And Greg Bateman.
Anyway, I'm not going to rehash the conversation I had last week. There's nothing that's happened in the last 7 days besides Bath losing narrowly to an extremely good Sale side and Bath actually playing quite well. So there's nothing that's going to make me change my mind on that.
Well, I'm in trouble at Bath, so I'll keep my powder dry on this because I've got a lot of thoughts about Bath and Stuart Hooper, and I'm going to share them tomorrow on a different podcast. I'm on the Bath Rugby Plug. So
I don't like this, JB.
Well,
I don't like this. You're going, I'm not going to, on the podcast we've done for 7 years, I'm not going to say what I think, but...
I think we've had for most of the past 18 years.
Actually, what am I talking about? What am I talking about? Yeah, great, good.
If you want me to talk about my Stuart Hooper thoughts.
Well, yeah, you'll say, or you can listen to the last 18 months of our podcast.
Oh, okay. So,
Tim, why did you... Why, Tim?
Here are some thoughts.
Why?
So I'm thinking now, Stuart Hooper is officially, well, he's officially not done well. This cannot be classed as a success.
But we knew that a few weeks ago.
So the question that's being now new. Is, do you back him to go forward? Because let's just think of Stuart Hooper in a different light. Let's say he's doing what he's doing now, but for a different club. And he learns his lessons, whatever those lessons may be. And then he comes into Bath. Would he be successful? I think he's got a good chance. But the question is, once you've made the mistakes at one club, can you then go and stay in that one club and then sort of make things better? Or do you need to necessarily move on? Is there a value in resetting your environment to be successful?
To answer that question for Hooper, I'd go back to my initial stance, which was, I'm not sure I like the appointment in the first place. So I guess eventually he might get enough credentials experience to be successful somewhere. But the continued poor performance you'd have to accept, both at Bath or wherever he goes, is not worth it.
I would just say the 90, well, and again, I'm not going to rehash what I've already said, but just a variation on the theme. The 2020-21 season is not one that you can accurately assess where Bath are at because they have been so hamstrung by international call-ups.
So would you stick with Hooper?
Well, yeah. Well, by its very nature, the 2021 season for Bath is not one you can assess where Bath are at because they've been uniquely hamstrung by international call-ups and COVID compressing the season, meaning they're missing massive amounts of talent for extended periods of time.
Would you have stuck with Murphy?
I'm trying to remember when he left his role.
End of last season.
Yeah, was it just
similar
before,
sort of thing?
It was before the end of last season.
Yeah, because you could accurately assess where Leicester were at.
Yeah, we knew
while he was at the helm.
We knew enough about Murphy.
So I don't think that's fair on Murphy because I think he inherited a lot of stuff, which was not his fault.
Oh no, totally, I agree with that.
Yeah, so this is why I think they're so analogous. You've got two guys who are clubbing through and through. Good guys working on their craft. I think Murphy would have done so much better if he'd taken the Cardiff job, which was allegedly offered to him, or the Northampton job, which allegedly was, you know, something which he could look. I think he was considered for it, whether that was a real thing, and then come back into Leicester, you know, with a completely resetted situation, a bit more power, can negotiate, you know, how he wants things to be run, and they could have stuck with him. But because of the way things went, he had to be fired, and I do think, you know, that's a tough thing for him to take. And I think with Hooper, we're looking at something similar, which is he should have all of the stuff he's done. Even what he's talking about, he's talking about the same stuff as the other coaches. He's gone and done qualifications. He's done all the, you know, what you'd think is the right steps to be in this role. But he just should have gone somewhere elsewhere.
Yeah, I would totally agree with the he should have gone somewhere else.
Yeah.
As in the... You get one crack at being a director of rugby. Most people will get one crack at being a director of rugby, particularly if you mess it up.
Yeah.
You will then have to go back to whatever your specialty is, if you're even going to stay in the game.
I'm not sure he's got a specialty, has he?
I just don't think... Well, he wasn't really a coach, was he? He was more
of a manager. He's not a coach.
He's not a coach.
Generic leader?
Leader/manager.
Yeah.
He's a DOR, or basically he's a managing director of Bath Rugby day-to-day. running, like the rugby side of things.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've spoken about this loads.
Yeah, we have. We've had 18 consecutive weeks on the same point.
Yeah.
I think it's a slightly different point, but still. I think it's 10 years. I think he'll stay, but I think I'd move on.
I think he will stay. There was another game this weekend.
Was there?
Did either of you see it?
Which one was it?
Well, there's loads of games, like Major League Rugby. Nola Gold lost, unfortunately.
And Houston Sabercats lost as well, unfortunately.
Yeah, Houston Sabercats have not been winning
struggling.
Much.
Unfortunately, Old Winnians lost to Bolton yesterday.
Is this your new team now?
It's not my new team.
You've given up on Tok H.
Tok H has basically turned into a social club. Like, there is no rugby going on at Tok H. No one is organising.
There's no socialising, though, is there? That's outrageous. I'm going to get the authorities on the cake.
No, as a Tok H for a few beers. Good but there is no rugby going on. No one's organised any fixtures. Like, how do you play rugby with no rugby games? That's why I'm there.
Do you know what? Someone's let us know that in Scotland, I believe tomorrow or today, as you're listening to this perhaps, is when you're still not able to do any type of full contact as an adult in Scotland. Like, obviously not elite pro level, but amateur level, which is, like, bonkers.
Horrific.
That is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah. The politics of COVID are beyond the scope of this podcast, but it plays into exactly that, doesn't it? What people think is good, what people think are virtuous, what people think is important. And completely discounts what is actually important, such as getting together with your mates to play rugby. But I will say this:
being healthy.
Yeah,
the RFU having an outlet to deal with the struggles that you process all week long. Not seeing your family and your loved ones and stuff. Anyway,
I'm gonna say the RFU have done a bloody remarkable job at somehow convincing the government that this form of rugby is somewhat COVID secure. I can tell you right now.
Well, other sports have been playing games for ages.
Yeah, but yeah, we're not rubbing each other's faces, in
tennis,
rucks.
Golf, cricket,
COD.
It is slightly different.
We can't scrummage. Okay, get it. We can't maul, but we can. You know, I mean, the rucks tackle, are exactly the same. You know, I'm picking and going into people. I don't know what, but I don't really care.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on a field.
Don't complain.
I'm with a good bunch of boys.
And I've got to say, a beautiful sunny Friday evening at Wilmslow Rugby Club.
Oh, we've got a beef. We've got a real problem. You and I, real problem.
Really?
You describe us as friends, wouldn't you, Tim?
I would hope so.
I will. So would I. You wouldn't do anything to, I don't know, maybe convince a player not to come to Tok H, but to go to Wilmslow Rugby Club, because I have a text here which says that you've recommended Wilmslow over Tok. You wouldn't do that, would you, Tim?
I didn't.
Would you do that? Would you do that? You wouldn't do that.
Well,
don't worry. I've cut this guy out of my life because I said there's no way Tim would do that. There's no way. Never ever call me again, Lewis.
My old man is a life member at Wilmslow Rugby Club. He was captain of the second team when Bill Beaumont was captain of the first team. I've got Wilmslow has a soft spot in my heart. Anyway, I was there on a beautiful sunny evening Friday night, and it was so good. I was watching my son Louis play, and just seeing an under 13s game of rugby playing again, it just felt absolutely brilliant.
It is wonderful.
Poor people in Scotland, get that going as soon as you can.
So just to confirm, I've made the right choice cutting this guy out of my life because he lied about
me. Has he gone to Wilmslow?
He said. From what I can say, maliciously, to drive a wedge between us, that you suggested that he goes to Wilmslow rather than immediately saying Tok H. I said, there's no way Tim would do that.
Well,
no way. Anyway, I've blocked his number. We don't need to discuss it anymore.
It's a good decision, JB.
Yeah.
It's a great club. Wilmslow's a great club.
I was there this morning.
Were you?
Yeah.
With Young Thomas?
With Young Thomas, doing his rugby tots.
Is it lovely.
Was it just you or was the two of you there?
Me and Thomas, plus friend Harry.
Yeah.
His boy Joe. It's actually amazing.
Smash him, son. You're giving it all that, yeah?
A little bit of that. It's actually genuinely, I'll say this, for a 2-year lad who's just over two, he's done 6 weeks of it now. I wouldn't say he's loving it, but just his ability to concentrate for that half an hour window. For the first session, he was able to concentrate for maybe 10% of the time. Now, after 6 weeks, he's up to like somewhere between 60 and 70% of the time.
No,
which
that's
is
not bad. That's not
the
bad.
The improvement over that period has
Let's
been
quite remarkable.
Let's have
a look at the spreadsheet on his performance levels. Come on,
have you got a little heart rate monitor on him yet?
Not yet.
Awesome.
Yeah. Good, but yeah, very good club, Sim. I'm not surprised you you didn't recommend
it. Lovely
that.
Club.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying.
Although what I will say is I left my bag there. And so on the way back from the Leicester game, someone from Wilmslow Rugby Club had picked it up and took it to the house. So I went to the guy's house to pick the thing up. My goodness, there's some nice houses right
there.
There
are some lovely
houses.
Oh,
my goodness.
There's some ridiculous houses around
there. It's crazy.
Yeah, one of my best friends from uni lived around there. And he's got a house. And you know it's a nice house when it doesn't have a number but a name. It was a phenomenal house, to put it mildly. Yeah. It's one of those houses, right, which is so big that they don't have floors. And what I mean by that is, so like, you know, you're in my little terracy thing now, and, you know, same with everyone's houses, actually. You go up the stairs and there's a floor.
There's a distinct ground floor, first floor.
This has got two-story windows in the little vestibule type area, that sort
it
of
has
thing.
It has a three-story conservatory, right? You go upstairs, and then, instead of floors, they have those sort of balconies going around so you can look down.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Mezzanine levels.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's like, wow. Wow. So, yeah, there's quite a lot of nice property in Wilmslow. But a substandard rugby club compared to Stockage, so.
Of course.
Obvs.
Well, there was another Premiership game. Wasps-Worcester.
Of course there was, yes.
Worcester have still only won one game this season.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, on the field. They've got more COVID wins than actual wins.
Which Worcester were leading 19-16... for the last 20 minutes when Wasps were down to 14 men because of the Ben Morris red card, and Worcester conspired to lose it. Wasps managed to win it.
You know, we do talk, don't we, about the championship. Mean, obviously, you've spoken a lot about the championship, Tim. The lack of relegation.
Wonderful competition.
Lack of relegation, promotion, so on and so forth. There does not seem to me to be a team more in need of a year in the championship than Worcester.
But then I was certain that Leicester's only way out of their funk for the preceding 2 years plus was relegation. And they managed to do it.
It was effectively ring fence because of Saracens last year, which is how they've managed to do it.
Yeah. I know, but all I'm saying is there is a way out without that relegation, but you've got to be. I mean, Leicester have been, certainly under Borthwick, pretty brutal in their retention and rebuild, and that is the only way if you're not going to get relegated.
And this is exactly what Jonathan Thomas is doing now. I think the biggest difference is between these two guys. Borthwick can pretty much write his own cheque to go into Leicester. I don't know what the numbers are, but I imagine if they want to get rid of him, it's going to be bloody expensive.
Yeah,
right. He's coming with a huge reputation.
Yeah,
and to be fair, he's delivering.
He is.
Yeah, you know, you want Borthwick in, you're going to have to make sure that you give him everything he wants. I would suggest. I don't know if that's true, but I think it's. Probably.
He's justifying it, yeah. And by the calls he's been allowed to make to cut players, he's been able to do it, yes.
So then you've got Jonathan Thomas, right, who it's his first go at being a DOR. Actually, same as Borthwick, first go at being a DOR. But you'd say without the reputation.
Should get rid then, shouldn't we, JB? He's underperforming. He's not doing well enough. We should get rid.
No.
I'm joking.
I'm trying to, you know, because the difference would be, like, that wasn't. He did go away, didn't he? He went to Bristol.
I know.
He was Bristol defence coach.
Yeah,
but he's not got the. So I'm not going to compare him back to Hooper, but he's not got the calibre, the breadth on his CV that Borthwick has.
Yeah.
Borthwick with his 100%. Saracens work, with his England work, with his Japan work, it's a different scale.
My prediction on Jonathan Thomas is he has got a plan. It's a reasonable plan. It's easy to understand. I kind of like it. It's going to be conditioning first and foremost. I think that's where he wants to be. He's turning around a lot of people in his squad, but here's what I think will happen. Worcester fans and the Worcester board will run out of patience. I just don't think. I think the job he's been asked to do is too big.
Too big for him.
Too big for him. It might be too big for anyone, actually. Unless they went and got someone like Steve Borthwick, actually, where you where you have to keep him because of his name, and then you've got to, you know, say, okay, we're going to give you a 5-year contract or something ridiculous. Then I can't see how he turns this around. It's such a hard job. I think it's
a tough ask.
Yeah. But if they stick with him, I think he might get somewhere. But I don't think he'll be consistently top six anytime soon.
Mushroom Cup, where are we at with it?
We're 3 rounds in. Benetton are the only undefeated team in the whole tournament.
Get in.
They currently top the table.
How did your beloved Ulster get on? I saw one little video of Hendo just rampaging.
Well, JB's beloved Benetton are top of the league. My beloved Ulster are flat bottom of the league.
Did you see the Henshaw tackle on... what's his name? I'm sure it is this week. They played Leinster, did they?
Leinster played Ulster.
Yeah. Henshaw tackles... Name some of your centres.
Hume?
McCloskey?
Nope.
Hume McCloskey. I'm sure they started.
No, it begins with an M. Maybe it's a winger.
Balakoon.
Him, that one. Balakoon.
Balakoon
gets absolutely annihilated by Henshaw.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I did see that.
Obliterated.
Yeah, ended.
So the reason it caught my attention, there's a guy in Talk H called Will who doesn't play anymore because his shoulders have just given up the ghost. But he has this uncanny knack of being able to hit someone below the chin, above the sternum, but always legal. Like, it is always... Yeah. I don't know how he does it.
In the sweet spot.
It is it's brutal to watch. Like, he doesn't do it much. He has done it in training, but in a game, you think, how do you do that? And this is exactly what Henshaw did. And obviously, everyone went wild about it.
Balakoon is... He has put on a bit of timber, but he's got the physique of, like, a 400-metre runner.
Oh, really?
He's lean, long legs. He's rapid. I think he finished a good try this week. But if you get hit by Henshaw... Because Henshaw is a big, powerful centre.
Like the way he hits it... And they reviewed it because it just looks so brutal. Like, well, it's legal. There's nothing...
Yeah,
nothing in the laws that say... And I don't know what law you can implement to stop that other than don't hit him as hard.
Do you want to stop
it? You don't want to.
I don't want to stop it.
Sorry, JB, you want to stop it?
Yeah,
you
want
me.
No.
Did either of you see the Marika Corabetti hit this
one? Oh, my word. No. That was out. Oh, yeah.
The Rebels were playing the Blues. It was a reserve prop for the Blues.
Yeah.
I mean, Blues put 50 points on the Rebels, but it was reserve prop, and it was a monstrous hit. A winger on a...
So Corabetti hits the prop?
Yeah. And it was... In the 22, Blues are hammering the Rebels, so it's kind of irrelevant. Blues are going round the corner and looking to spread it wide. The prop picks the ball there into his chest, and Corabetti just comes in, totally blindsides him, and nails him.
Absolutely
nails him. Which there was maybe not 100% rap, but just let the boys play on that one. Nowhere near the head. Superb hit.
I don't know if it's just... It must be physical as well as the mentality of Fijian born stars. I played it... You must have played it at Sedgley Park with and against.
Some awesome
Fijians.
Islander boys,
We used to get a load of... We used to get some Fijian servicemen playing at Newbury, and Damu, who played in the England seven side, we had him at number eight. And oh my God, I'm just... yeah, it's frightening.
Yeah,
it's frightening.
Corabetti is some boy.
Having your bones shaken by those type of hits.
Last thing I think I'll mention. Have you seen that I've been selected for a side, boys?
We have. Yeah.
Only because you told them that I was a hooker, not a back row.
You are a hooker.
No, I'm a back row that has played hooker. When I was more than 90 kgs as well.
No, I mean, I can put you forward.
No, I'm all right. if they're desperate. But no.
So
what was the selection process? Just tell us about that.
The selection process was, hi, JB, Ben Moon's testimonial coming up. I've got a proposition for you. And I just I automatically said, wait. So I was going to ask the guy selecting Chris Bentley if I could play. And before as I was typing, wait, I want to play. He said, would you play? He's like, yes, I'll bloody play. Absolutely, I will play. So I don't know if this is true. I assume it's true. He says there's 10,000 tickets sold in Sandy Park.
Awesome.
So I am playing against an Exeter Chiefs side. Like Dolman, Jess.
Steenson.
Salvi. Who else is in that team?
Kai Horseman,
Tom Johnson of the opposition back row. And I'm with Johnny Beattie, myself, and another. So there is someone
Tim
else.
Tim Cocker.
There you are, Tim Cocker. There we are. What more do I need to beat up Julian?
Me and you on the flank either side of Johnny Beattie.
What else do I need to beat up Tom Johnson and Julian Salvi other than my friend Tim. So I don't know how
there'll definitely be some beating going on.
Yeah. I don't know how I'm going to navigate this. I thought, so I'm taking more seriously, I should spin him a story. Like, so we train on the Friday to make sure we line out some whatnot. And obviously they're going to know that I didn't play Premiership or International or whatnot. I might just spin him a story that I spent most of my time out in Japan. I was an investment banker with Nomura. Obviously, I played a little bit. And they're not going to know that I never really played since Suntory Sun Goliaths, are they?
You know your way around a Strong Zero.
Yeah.
And some Japanese whiskey.
I'm pretty sure if I just put my game head on, yeah, I can talk to them about Strong Zero, absolutely. I could sound, if I don't train, I can sound like I know what I'm talking about in the line out. I can make all the right noises, clap and say the right things. But my biggest worries are twofold. One, showing up looking like I've never played rugby in my life compared to those boys. And then two is, what if they lift me and my legs come apart and I just look like a complete amateur?
So, I would be more worried about the hits.
Not worried about hits.
You're not worried about... Okay.
No, because I think everyone's going to be going at, like... I did get a fair warning, right? Don't try and be a hero, because last hero got ended by Danny Grucock. So I think, like, they're okay. They're going to be playing 50%. Yeah, it'll be fine.
I'm very disappointed I can't come to watch that.
Yeah.
I'm even more disappointed you can't play.
I can't play. I've played against a few of those boys.
Yeah, you have. You've already played against them.
Yeah, well, when suggesting, like, what position would you play? I was like, well, I play tight head for...
you don't want to play tight
head. Whose testimonial is it? Ben Moon's? No, thank you.
You're not going to...
Hold up the scrum against Ben Moon. No.
No.
So who else is in the team? So Johnny Beattie you mentioned.
So in the team which I'll be playing for, I think confirmed, and I'm not sure if I'm going to... I'll just tell you anyway. Hodgson at 10. Hook is in the team, so I guess he'd be fullback. Tyndall, Tom James, and there's a few other spaces. And in the second row, I think it's Hugh Vivian and Dean Schofield. So like, I couldn't even play second row. Imagine me standing there and saying, Hugh bloody...
Bearing in mind those are the names you're mentioning, is there any part of you that's sort of going, why are they asking me?
No. Well, yeah, because it's a big day for James Hook to play with me, isn't it? It's not every day he gets to do this.
Any part of you like... questioning the safety of this?
I think it'll be I don't know. I mean, I guess Salvi wants to go to his job on the Monday if he's working. I don't know.
Well,
maybe.
All I'll say is JB's already proven he will do a podcast from a hospital bed if necessary. He's already has done in the past.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Well, the time that you lasted,
David Flatman said this. He said, "I will never play another game again in my life, except for if you're playing, in which case I might." Which sounds like a threat.
The last time you did it from a hospital bed, because both JB and myself, to me, you're the only one who's not done the podcast from a hospital bed.
Yeah, you're quite right.
We spoke to JB, this was in the early days because we were at XFM. We spoke to you like 5 minutes before we kind of hit the record button, and you were so out of it on medication. You were babbling, you were not making sense.
That's not true.
And then when we press the button to record, you were perfectly clear, perfectly logical. Actually, more logical and clear than you often are.
Have you ever seen the episode of Father Ted?
Exactly. Exactly.
No way, he's a complete pro when he's on air.
It was exactly like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to see me get absolutely written off by Julian Salvi, Tom Johnson.
What date is this?
I think it's 4th of September at Sandy Park. Yeah, come watch me get beaten up. For Ben Moon.
You beat up Julian Salvi, yeah, Kai Holtzman, Tom Johnson.
Yeah. And I'm going to spin them a story. In fact, if you've got any suggestions as to what story I spin these lads...
Why would you spin a story when it's going to be... The truth is going to cut... The truth will out. Yeah. They're not going to go, I'll let him run through because he played in Japan.
No. This is how it'll go down, Tim, right? What will happen is everyone's like, a bit of a gentleman's agreement. Yeah, okay. We're all pretty good. We don't want to play... we want to play 50%. Blah, blah, blah. But then they're going to find the weakling, me. You know, actually, he's a weakling. You
can't switch off the natural competitive nature of elite sportsmen.
Brilliant.
You can't switch that off. That just does not get switched off. I was only having a chat with my mum earlier, and she was laughing at the fact my brother was being really competitive playing a board game with his 5 and 3 year old sons. And that's that's just the way those guys are wired.
I've got plenty of tricks up my sleeve. I know my way around a rugby pitch. I'll be fine.
You're still playing. Most of those guys aren't.
Exactly. Tom Johnson's a personal trainer.
You're doing CrossFit.
just in any other business. You're right. That's the story you tell them, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all right. I do CrossFit, guys. I do those weird, stupid pull-ups where I look like a dying fish hanging onto a bar. a little bit of any other business. I want to go to America so badly on a Tier 2 tour. I'm loving Major League Rugby. I just want to shout it again. My team, NOLA Gold, got a beating this week, but the conferences are wide open.
In
the Western Conference, the Gilgronis and the Giltinis are both top, are the top two teams. In the Eastern Conference, it's the Arizona, I've forgotten what their name is,
Atlanta. ATL.
It's Atlanta.
Yeah.
Are top from the New York Rugby Club, and then NOLA. But JP Doyle's out there, and we need to get out there and drinks with him.
We do. I mean, yes. I'm going to tell you, Tim, it's not on. You're not unusual in having this thought that we want to get out there for tier two tour. I think we really want to get out there for tier two tour.
Any opportunity?
Hypothetically, which is your preferred destination?
Well, the American rugby pod guys are in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yep.
Yeah.
JP Doyle's in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, that is exciting. Do you know the only problem with Atlanta, Georgia?
What?
Allegedly, this is not according to me, this is according to the guys that live there, Warren and Preston. It's mostly just on one street. Now, I'm not saying that the drinking should be first and foremost, but we should definitely consider that. Because it's just like what Atlanta's putting just one big street and then all the pubs. Mind you, is that a bad thing? Yeah, I think.
Austin, I'm up for Austin Gilgronis.
Is there one in Nashville?
Austin's Texas. Austin,
no. Is there one in Nashville?
Read you the list. So we've got Austin, Texas, Houston, Texas, Los Angeles.
Yeah. Mm.
Then San Diego Legion play games in San Diego, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and Chula Vista.
That's too much. No.
Seattle, Seattle would be pretty cool.
Yep.
That would be cool.
Utah Warriors, Salt Lake City.
Nah.
New England Free Jacks in Boston, Massachusetts.
Nah.
I'd like to do Boston.
It's easy to get to.
NOLA Gold.
I'm all up for Louisiana. I'm all up for New Orleans.
Glory DC, Washington.
Nah.
No, not up for Washington.
Rugby New York.
We've done it before.
It a few times. Rugby ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. And the Toronto Arrows.
Not interested in kind of one bit.
I'm interested in Toronto.
Oh, yeah, we've got options.
I'm go. If I could rank them, I'd rank New Orleans number one.
New Orleans, yeah, I think New Orleans would be
cool.
Houston or
Austin would be good.
Yeah, I want to go to that deep south area, partly because I've been watching loads of music documentaries, and like rock and roll music all started in Mississippi, Tennessee, Louisiana, Buddy Holly and all that. So I want to go and soak up a bit of that.
I wouldn't mind doing...
And some rugby.
Maybe we need to do more than one weekend there. It just doesn't sound like we can square the circle with one weekend.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Anyway, tier two tours. Yeah, we'll get planning. If you've got any suggestions or you've been anywhere, let's get out. I want to support Major League Rugby. It's got nothing to do with...
Well, look, tier two tour number one. Let's get this one sorted. North Dorset Sevens.
Yes.
Look them up. Find out. If you are a patron subscriber to us, we will make sure that you are well looked after in terms of the live.
Have you put the information up yet?
No, we've had it confirmed last night.
Okay, cool.
We've had some things confirmed last
night. 23rd, 24th, 25th of July. It's a Lions weekend, so we'll be watching the second test, I think it is. On the Saturday, we'll be playing some rugby across the weekend. There'll be an event we're putting on the Friday night and a live podcast on the Sunday. And a whole load of shenanigans in between.
Perfect. Can't wait.
Gillingham in North Dorset. Wonderful.
All sorted.
Yeah, he's at Jay Beardmore on Cocker. He's at Jay Beardmore on Twitter. I don't want to see you on Twitter because I'm getting off that hellhole. Phil is lurking. I'm going to do what Phil does. I'm going to start lurking and just reading. I'm not going to post. I'm just going to read. I'm going to be a lurker as well. And we're at Rugby Podcast, patreon.com/eggchasers. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Go and hit subscribe on that YouTube feed. Hit subscribe on the podcast feed, for goodness sake. And let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.